All right, guys, tonight, this interview is so much fun. It's pretty awesome when you have a brand owner that's so passionate and so excited about what he's doing. And tonight, you're going to meet James and you're going to meet his dad, Jim Bob Morris, one of the co-founders of El Bendito Yankee. You know, the story behind him playing football and meeting Chris Chelios and bringing this brand together. And you're also going to learn about that logo right there and where that whole thing came from. So stick around, man. This one is a bunch of fun. It's tasting tequila with Brad. All right, guys, I am fired up. These interviews for me keep getting better and better and better with some of the most incredible people. And we've got returning guest James Morris, and we've got the one and only Jim Bob Morris, the owners of El Bendito Yankee. I'm so excited to talk to you guys. How are you guys doing tonight?
Great, buddy. Thank you for having me, man. You know, you've had James on the show before. I mean, I'm trying not to be redundant.
Well, you know, I got James on. I was so excited to meet James and talk about your brand. And then I've just been trying to figure out how to lasso the big dog ever since. So I'm so glad that you were able to find some time. I know that you guys are crazy busy getting ready for a wedding and everything. So thanks for taking your time out tonight to do this. I'm really excited.
We got a real bandito spirit getting married this coming weekend. Allie, James's sister, my daughter, Allie. And Allie, obviously, she works at El Bandito, too. You need to get her on your show, too.
We just have y'all come to Indy and make it a family affair.
Yeah, well, we're coming for sure. You have my guarantee on that, buddy.
That's awesome. Well, do me a favor, Jim. Tell everybody a little bit about your background, your pre-tequila world. What did you do before all of this crazy stuff?
Yeah, I think it's a good story in the fact that, you know, I'm a former professional football player. You know, I played in the NFL, played in the USFL. And the reason I think that makes a good story is that, you know, my partner is a NHL Hall of Famer in Chris Chelios. And I think the competitive side of what we do, you know, helps us be good marketers. I mean, this is an incredibly, as you know, Brad, it's an incredibly competitive business. I mean, we're going up against billionaire brands. And so our background, our pedigree of who we are as far as that competitive spirit, I think that really helped us in this. You know, so I played football until I was 30 years old. I mean, I didn't have people go, well, you didn't have a great career because you got hurt a lot. And I go, yes, I was in a lot of car wrecks on the field all the time. And they're car wrecks, okay? And, you know, I've had 22 different surgeries. Some of them, a lot of them from football. Some of them were, hey, hold my El Bandito, watch this. So we've got that, but you know, the story is I met Chelios and Chelios is good friends with Randy and Cindy Crawford, Randy Gerber and Cindy Crawford. And so Chris was drinking Casamigos at the time I first met him. And I wasn't a really big tequila drinker. But I also, you know, we have a bunch of different companies. We have 28 different LLCs, and we're involved in packaging. We're involved in obviously spirits with El Bendito Yankee. We're involved in the gaming industry. We're involved in the food ingredients business. We're in the pet food ingredients business. So we're in the pet food business really big. We have farms and family farms and aviation and just on and on different industries. But we, I meet Chris and I've got this food ingredients company. I'm in a lot of food science labs and we're drinking and I don't like it. And I go, you know, I don't like it. I mean, he goes, why? I go, I can pick up the vanilla. I can pick up the, you know, like the, you know, sweetener element, whether it's vegetable glycerin or what. And he's just adamant about, I got to keep drinking it to like it. And I go, no. And so with my food company, I'm buying about $70 million of agave, and we're taking agave and we're making agave nectar and agave sweetener. We are replacing sucrose and fructose off the labels and cleaning the labels up and putting agave syrup or agave nectar or even honey. And this goes back, you know, I started that, you know, in 2006, and we were doing 2007, 2008, 2009. And I was making some really good money off of agave, and making agave nectar and agave sweetener. Some of my friends were calling me, you know, Mr. Agave. You know, I wasn't even in the tequila business yet. And so this is 2:30 in the morning, and Chilios and myself and our buddy Big Tony, we are in downtown Chicago, and we're at the Lux Bar. And I go, I don't like it. And he goes, well, maybe Mr. Agave, maybe we should do our own tequila. You know, and I thought I knew everything about agave. Okay, wrong. Okay, wrong. But so it's 2:30 in the morning, and I sit there and I go, you got a name for this if we do it? He goes, yes. Did you ever see the movie Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid? And I've seen the movie, you know, hundreds of times. Yeah, I've seen the movie. He goes, well, there's a line in there when they go down to Bolivia, Colombia, and they rob a bank. I go, okay, what's the line? He goes, I'm thinking that we should call ourselves El Bandido Yankees. And I sit there and I go, because, you know, it was Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. It was a great Western. They were badass. And I liked the way, you know, the movie was and the story of the hole in the wall gang. And I'm sitting there thinking about it. And so I ask for this. Keep in mind, this is 2:30 in the morning. I asked for a piece of paper and a pen, and I drew the logo of our iconic figure that's on that bottle in front of you. He became, now I drew, when I first drew it, Brad, that's it, man. We drew that, and that's pretty exactly right on from how I drew it from 2:30 in the morning, being, you know, pretty well intoxicated. So that's how the brand got started. And then I made some calls that week and got things rolling. And then we got hooked up with my friend Jeff Ernst, who's involved with G4, which is a very good tequila. And Jeff was instrumental in advising me and consulting with me. And so we put together a consortium of tasters that we wanted. And we went down to El Viejo and met with Juan Eduardo. And we met Karina Rojo, you know, our female master distiller. And that's how we got initiated. I mean, we come back and I'd have a big party. We'd be at Chicago Cup with my buddy at David Flom, and he let us host our tasting parties at Chicago Cup there in downtown Chicago. And so we would do tasting parties, and then we'd get, you know, we'd have steak, and, you know, then it'd be another 2:30 in the morning type deal. But that's how the brand got started. And after about five or six times, when we felt that Karina had really got it smoothed out, we agreed with it on the Blanco originally. And people go, how was it working with Karina Rojo? And I go, well, it was excellent. I mean, she doesn't speak a lick of English, and I don't speak a lick of Spanish. And so we got along perfectly. We should have got married. I mean, it was perfect. Yeah. If she was mad at me, I didn't know it. If I was mad at her, she didn't know it. She didn't know. So we got along wonderfully. And so we produced Blanco. And we oxygenated it because we were going to launch a bourbon called the Horseman. And so we went down to Bairdstown and we bought a bunch of barrels with Bairdstown. And this tequila business took off so fast, we didn't launch the Horseman. We put that on the sidelines, and we got to roll on the Blanco. And then, you know, later we had the Reposado, and then, you know, a year later we had our Añejo, and then we came out with the Plata 47, and then we've got a Steel Strength that's coming out later this year. But that's kind of the story of the beginning.
That's pretty awesome.
Cheers to you on that too.
Cheers for doing that. Mm-hmm. And I like that you worked with Eduardo in the beginning. And that's, like we said before we started recording, that takes me back to my original tequila was, you know, Eduardo was the master distiller of the first tequila that I fell in love with. And this distillery has always had like a place for me, knowing that that's where, you know, my heart came from. And I love the tequilas from there. And the first time I had yours, I was like, okay, this is legit. And like I said, it was local in Indiana. So yeah. It was one that, you know, I started drinking it before I started doing the content, and was already a fan. So that's a really cool story. How do you think professional football prepared you for all of the business things that you do today? Because I have some friends that played in professional sports. Some of them have been very successful in businesses and others haven't. What did you get that really gave you this drive to be successful in so many businesses?
Well, thank you for that question. I'll start with, you know, on the tequila, when you step on the holy ground of the Green Bay Packers, I was a football enthusiast growing up and I was a big fan. I mean, I studied the game. I mean, I could tell you, everything about, 1960s football, 1970s football. I mean, I really was a fan of the game. And the passion of the game and the authenticity of someplace like Lambeau. I mean, that's sacred holy ground. And the Lombardi era and so forth. And so I was a purist. I probably should have played in the 1960s. I probably wouldn't have played very long because they didn't have some of the advanced surgery techniques that I had that allowed me to get back on the field. But I think that the professional football side, especially playing it, I started at the Chiefs, played in the USFL and went to the Raiders and then to the Packers and then the Houston Oilers when my last year I broke my back. I think that the competitive edge that you get that's needed to launch an independent brand like this, you better be ready for some setbacks and you better be ready to be competitive and you better be ready to, kick some ass. And we've been a very good brand out there in regards to, we're not the disruption level that I thought we would get to earlier. I felt that basically being clean and not having any additives whatsoever and going back to the 1600 level of how we made tequila with the original element of just, hey, we got Blue Weber Agave. You got water, deep well water, you got great water, you got yeast. That's it in time, and that's it. And that's the authenticity I was searching for, Chris was searching for. We wanted, and the reason that we oxygenated at first was going back to the horseman. When I was doing the bourbon trail and trying to figure out a flavor profile, one of the things a lot of the people were complaining about that I had with me at the time was they weren't accustomed to the bourbon burn. I had some neophytes, in regards to the spirits world. And it got me thinking along the lines, I go, hey, I don't want people to get consumed by that initial alcohol, burn that you get. I wanted them to have the mouthfeel and have them to develop a palate for it. And so that's why we oxygenated the Blanco. And I was, I'll be honest, we were criticized for it in the fact that it was too smooth. And that's why we tagged the line so smooth it's criminal, to follow along with our badass bad boy image of being banditos. But I really did. We focused on wanting to oxygenate it so you could taste what real agave is supposed to taste like, what real Blue Weber agave is supposed to taste like. Not heavy vanilla, not heavy caramelized, not heavy sugary or vegetable glycerin, real agave. And so I'm really stoked about the new steel strength that we've got coming out. I'm super happy about the Plata 47 that we did, which was our high proof, considered, really one of the world's best high proofs out there by a lot of people. And I really like the fact that it was so agave forward. And we did not oxygenate that because when we got it initially, man, that agave forward element of Plata 47 from El Bandido Yankee was so good. You caught it right away on the mouthfeel. And so, I'm in a lot of food science plants, whether it's Cargill or Tyson or Simmons or whether it's Post or General Mills or Kellogg's. I mean, I've been in a lot of food science operations. And so people go, do you think you developed a better palate? I go, I don't know if I've developed a better palate. People told me I could articulate what I was actually tasting finally. I was at one place I couldn't come up with a description. And he goes, does it kind of taste like cement? And I go, yes,
yes.
I haven't ate cement in a long time.
Yeah. I get that. Like I'll have something or somebody say, well, how do you know that's what that tastes like? Well, because that's what it smells like. And 70 to 80% of what we taste come from smell anyway. So I've never ate concrete, but I know what wet sidewalk smells like when you're walking in a humid day in Florida when the rain came down and the sun came up and you smell that concrete. So I just envision if I ate it, that's probably what it's going to taste like.
Yeah, no doubt. And then, the real taste element starts with your eyes. You know, your eyes pick up, and you start with your eyes, and then, you know, you pick it up with your sense of smell, and I was able to, we really wanted authentic. I really wanted that agave to come through to where, you know, and I thought that, you know, I'd seen so many tequilas out there when we got into this business, and so many that we're using additives, we're using vanilla, we're using caramel, we're color and taste, and adding, you know, a percent of sweetener to it. I didn't feel great tequila needed that. I mean, we really, truly, really, we want to be authentic in regards to, we want people to taste the real agave the way it was done back in the 1660s. You know, when the conquistadors, they didn't like the mezcal, and they said, hey man, you guys ought to think about this. So thank you, Spaniards.
No doubt. That's awesome. All right, I'm gonna ask James a question over there. What's it like working with your dad every day, and how do you keep all of this energy reined in so you can get things done every day?
You know, he's always right, even when he's not. You just got to smile, say, yep, exactly, we'll do that. And then a lot of times, maybe don't do that.
Hey, Brad, I'll tell you what they do is that I've got this barbecue apron that I have, and it says, because I'm the chef, it says, I might be wrong on the apron, but below it says, I doubt it.
Yeah. Well, it's got to be awesome to be able to work with your kids. That's pretty cool.
It is fun working with your kids, and the fact that, you know, a couple things is that, you know, this is a young person's business in a lot of regards. I mean, the young person business is that out there, you know, liquid to lips and talking about it and so forth. I mean, you know, the older side, which is, you know, I mean, hey, we handle the monetary side. But I mean, James is learning a lot about, hey, the transportation side, the supply chain side. You know, we're a global enterprise. I mean, every day, you know, whether depending on what particular entity, I mean, we're getting things, you know, from Taiwan, from Indonesia, from India. You know, obviously Mexico is a big partner of ours, not only on tequila, but, you know, whether it's food products or food chemicals or element, we're moving stuff all over. And so James has got a good lesson in regards to transportation and how difficult that job is. The supply chain and keeping us in product and stock and making sure that the planning at the plant level is accomplished in regards to our needs. It's a tough business. I mean, overall, I mean, and so I think they're getting hands-on experience. They might not appreciate it every week because there's a lot of, you know, damn it, where's the trucks? You know, and that's just how that goes. That's part of the transportation supply chain cycle.
With the other businesses that you have, what is the most difficult thing about the tequila business that you don't deal with in the other businesses that you have?
Wow, that's a great question.
I would say one is, and I don't want to rip on distributors, but having to rely on distributors is obviously pretty tough, getting them behind the brand. And then,
true.
You know, there's about 2,800 other brands. It's one of the most competitive.
It's absolutely one of the most competitive business that we're in. I, you know, we're in the gaming industry too. I mean, you know, we've got a gaming company called Wanna Parlay. We have a great product. We're up against people that are spending $1 billion on advertising. Same thing on the gaming side that we see on the tequila side. I mean, you've got the big guys out there, you know, Bacardi, Brown-Forman, you know, Diageo. You know, you got these guys that are spending $1 billion, you know, and, you know, that's hard to compete with. And so, you know, we've got a pretty big staff. You know, I think at the high point, you know, we have 75 people out there pushing our brand across the United States. I don't know that I anticipated that side of it. I thought that, you know, we would get more assistance from the distributors and helping make our brand. And that's just not true today because of where the distributor world is today and how things are coming out with that business. The distributors don't make your brand. You have to go make your brand. And that's been probably something that I overlooked, you know, when we started this, but, you know, we adapted to it. And we we were able to pivot and we got the right people out there that are pushing. Look, we spent a lot of money though. I mean, for a brand our size, I mean, you know, we were in NASCAR, we're in auto racing, we're in the motorcycle racing side, we're in the boat racing side. We sponsored Jelly Roll on the baptism tour. He was one of our first celebrity sponsors that we had when Jelly Roll was just coming out. I didn't know who he was, you know. I go, who's Jelly Roll? And I saw pictures of him and I go, okay, well, what is this guy? He's a big guy, you know, he's just a big old guy. And so the kids drug me to a concert. Funny story. I saw him the first time, and he came to Tailgates and Tall Boys in Bloomington, Illinois, and I got to hear him perform before he was big. And literally about 6 months later, I'm flying to Nashville, and I fly into Nashville, and I'm getting off the jet, and I'm walking in, and I run into Jelly Roll. And I go, hey, Jelly, Jim Bob, we met in Bloomington. He didn't remember it or anything. And I said, what's going on, man? And we just flown in to Nashville. He goes, well, I'll tell you what, man, I'm waiting on Kid Rock. And Kid Rock is good friends with Chelios, too. And so this story, I go, he goes, waiting on Kid Rock, his jet. They're going to take us over to, we got to go do a gig over in Cleveland. And I don't know if we're going to get here or not. And I go, and it was like 5 o'clock. And I go, well, hell, we'll take you. And, you know, he goes, what? I go, what? Yeah, shit, I don't have anything better to do. We'll take you. And so, you know, I got the pilots. I go, hey, man, we might want to file for Cleveland. We'll take Jelly Roll with us. And then kid's Challenger came in and he's got the big sign on the tail. You know, it's like,
yeah, yeah.
And by the way, Kid Rock's been good for us in Nashville. He brought in El Bandito. We was one of the first guys to do it. So I appreciate that. And he's good friends with Chris and so forth. But so anyhow, after that, Jelly's team got a hold of us a couple months later. And we started working on sponsoring his first big tour, the baptism tour. And so, I was with his agency and everything. And when he won, you know, newcomer of the year in Nashville, we went to the CMA Awards. And the guy I was working with from his agency fist bumps me. And he looks at me, I bet you think you're pretty smart signing Jelly and all that. And I go, no, I know I'm pretty smart. I go, I also know that we're not going to be able to keep him because what right. we got for this year, we're not going to be able to afford him anymore. And that was true too. So
that's awesome.
Part of that being smart.
Yeah. Well, now Jelly's lost 300 pounds. I think he has to drop the role from his name altogether. He looks fantastic. He's working really hard. I seen an interview with him where he ran 6 miles in the morning and then ran another 6 miles in the evening. He's done it all right.
We
Pretty
couldn't
incredible.
Pick the worst time to have him be a sponsor and him and so forth is that he was just starting this clean up your body act and he had stopped drinking and basically he was still smoking. Okay. He was still doing the doobie and so forth. I mean, I saw that firsthand on stage, but I mean, he put the heavy drinking and so forth. So we really couldn't pick the worst time. It would have been great when it was really bad and he was drinking and that would have helped the brand a lot.
Sure. Yeah. He's pretty incredible. That's pretty neat. You guys did that. Also Nashville, aren't you still the sponsor of the baseball field there, the baseball stadium in Nashville as well?
Yeah. The Nashville Sounds.
Yeah. Nashville Sounds.
Yeah. And then, you know, our NHRA bike, we made, you know, we go out to, you know, Sturgis with all our bikes and we really support. Rusty Wallace has made a couple custom bikes for us. And so we go out there and support his charity and Children's Foundation with Rusty and everything. And I think we do a lot of good stuff on the giving back side, you know, we're Sacred. And then we do, I mean, we've spent millions and millions of dollars collectively on an annual basis. We give so much with the companies on the give back side. I'm very proud of what we do as corporations on the give back. But like I was mentioning, we spent a lot of money, you know, trying to get out there and get our name recognized. So we had a great story and we've got those great stories. And so now it's really just focusing on, I think our products are good. And thank you for, again, you know, having us on the show to be able to talk about the products. But, you know, we spent a lot of time, you know, I met Sammy, you know, when Sammy was there at El Vieto and he was out with his tequila, you know, the Saint, and his tasting room was right next to ours. So, and Sammy's a great guy. I love him. I mean, he's a super, super nice person. I did not meet Guy Fieri, but Santos, their tequila, I will tell you, it was pretty good. I mean, El Bandido Yankee is, I mean, in my opinion, and I'm not being biased, I mean, better, you know, I think our product was better than that. But it was fun having that celebrity, you know, associated with, you know, the same distillery that we, and that was kind of a cool story too. And Chelly, you know, Chelly's, you know, since he was about 40, all he does is, you know, he drinks, you know, he's a tequila guy. I mean, and he's a, you know, he loves our brand. I get the sign off from him on everything that we do in regards to the, on the taste side. Fortunate for us, we have pretty close to the same palate likes. And so that's easy. I mean, it's hard though. I mean, you know, I have a hard time. People keep asking us, well, what's next? You know, what's next for you guys? And we're going to do that steel strength 55 and we're going to come out with that. That Plata 47 to me, you know, it was small batch, but I just love that Plata 47. On this steel strength, and we'll do a Super Añejo as well. We've got a lot of really fun stuff coming on down the pipe.
That's awesome. I was gonna ask you, are you gonna do an extra Añejo anytime in the future?
Yes, we are. That's one of my goals, is to do that. You know, the extra Añejo. We're gonna do something of a special edition on that too. And then, you know, we talk about being the inspiration. When Chris brought up the Hole in the Wall gang and Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, the movie, and we came up with El Bandido Yankee. And my original drawing was, because he said Yankees, El Bandido Yankees. And so I drew it, and we went to town on it with the PR. Well, I had a lot of people working for me at the time that were, you know, coming out of pretty heavy bureaucratic spirits companies, you know, Anheuser-Busch. And they go, oh, no, we can't use Yankees. And the New York Yankees sued us. Not everybody knows this story, but the New York Yankees sued us. You know, I'm a pretty tolerant guy. We don't lose lawsuits. I just, so, you know, we don't lose. We're like 7-0. And we got sued by the Yankees, and they go, hey, you can't put, you know, El Bandido Yankees on a baseball glove. Okay. You can't put it on, you know, batting gloves. And they're working towards where I thought they were going to go. Baseball bats, baseball shoes. Okay. Yeah. And then they got pretty brave, and then baseball hats. And then that's when we go, no, we're putting it on baseball hats. And so we won that ridiculous issue there. But, you know, the inspiration of Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, and a friend of mine drove out to the Hole in the Wall gang's hideout and brought me back. He took a bottle of ours, put it in the mud, and it's sitting on my counter at home, and it's mud's encrusted on it. And so we've got it from the, you know, the real Hole in the Wall gang there. And then he brought me some rocks back from the area there. And it's one of my most prized possessions, to be honest. I mean, because, you know, that inspiration of who we wanted to be a fun brand. We wanted to be a brand that brought people together. We do a lot of radio shows, and we have our own podcast, the Jim Bob Show, and with my buddy Dane and so forth. And we're always talking about, you know, El Bandido Yankee. It's such a great gathering of people in good times. We've put more people together than Tinder.
When you do a special release, you need to do a picture of that bottle that's in the mud with the rocks. You need to put that on a special edition bottle so people can see it and share with that. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, no, that would be a great idea. But when you're going to get the first bottle of the, I'm going to send you the bottle of the steel strength. And then when we do the Super Añejo, it's great. You know, people, again, back to when we started, I mean, I had that group of people from Anheuser-Busch and other spirits entities, Bacardi, and they were very woke. And, you know, you can't use the word Yankee. And I go, guys, ladies and gentlemen, you know, the minute we cross that border and go down to Mexico, and the story, when I was creating the storyboard and the storyline for El Bandido, was, you know, this guy, he jumped on his horse and he was riding out of, you know, the United States and crossed that border. Well, as soon as he crossed that border, you know, gringo or Yankee, And that's right. What we're called. I don't care if you're from, you know, you can be from Key West, Florida, you cross that border, you're a Yankee. You could be from Macon, Georgia, you cross that border, you're a Yankee. You could be from California, you cross it, you're a Yankee. That's just the name. And I wasn't about to let that element of political correctness or whatever you want to call it, interfere with it. And I go, I want to take the time and people to understand the story of El Bandido Yankee. And it originates from the Hole in the Wall gang and that robbery in Bolivia. And so I love, that's the inspiration of the story. I love telling it. And I like, you know, the fact that, you know, again, tying our roots to authentic things, authentic ingredients, authentic people, you know, tying it to the Highland agave and the Blue Weber agave and the old school cooking, that whole process. And then, you know, having a master distiller who was a woman was cool too, from my perspective. I mean, you know, to me, the industry is male driven and pretty macho. And I love the fact that, you know, we had a female master distiller. I mean, it's like to start this, it was great because that's like having an NFL coach that's a woman, you know, a right. position coach, you know, I mean, yeah. it's really unique and power, you know, hey, hats off to Karina.
Yeah. Karina, there's several, you know, now, you know, when you look back right. 5, 6, 8 years ago, you know, you didn't have, you maybe had Anna, right. We all talked about Anna back in the day and then Melly and then now Ileana and Karina, there's so many there. Yeah. And they're amazing people. And I've said this many times, I think sometimes some of the female master distillers have a different touch on tequila and have just a better rounded flavor in several cases. And I mean, I love all the things that these other women are doing, and what Karina's doing is amazing as well.
One of the things too is that I try to walk people through the criminally smooth. You know, we got sued over that too. You
really?
Know, so smooth it's criminal. We, you know, I mean that. I mean, of the 7 lawsuits, you know, that I've been in on the business side, I mean, 4 of them come from spirits. But the criminally smooth secret was basically explaining the steps of fully oxygenating tequila and why. I wanted that harsh, like I said, that harsh alcoholic bite when it hits you. I wanted that to go away so you could get that uncommon freshness of being able to taste the agave. That's why we did it. And then when we started that Blanco, I had a profile in my head that I wanted to get with that. I wanted, you know, I certainly wanted it to be crisp. I wanted it to have, you know, you could get those hints of the baked agave, have a peek of the citrus side of it and the black pepper and then, you know, the buttery side of it. And I think we did a pretty good job on that, you know, as far as catching those notes that we were searching for. We had the profile stepped out before we came up with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. So for people who don't know, some people watch these are, you know, true agave nerds. Some people, you know, are learning about tequila. So you're finishing distillation. You're going into probably stainless steel tanks to rest. And then the oxygenating process, that's a machine that is then taking air and bubbling it into those tanks. And how long do you guys do like a normal oxygenation? Is it like a 24-hour process or less or more?
Yeah, it's a short process. I mean, it doesn't last that long. And the fact that, you know, the key is that, you know, Karina, you know, is capturing, you know, that perfect element every time, you know, over and over again. And so, you know, when we do that oxygen process, I mean, it's not as long as you think. I mean, and so we had to struggle with that oxygenation process. We did it with Reposado, but the Añejo came out so smooth. You know, we didn't, you know, we basically, when we started with the Añejo, we started, you know, we came off, we used steel strength on the Añejo and we, you know, we didn't have to oxygenate it again. And so that was something that we talked to ourselves about, you know, should we not? And then when we did the Plata 47, you know, that was just, you know, right out of the get go. It came across so great with that agave forward, man. I didn't want to mess with it, you know.
And sure,
this is what's cool too is that, you know, I don't know how many times on the show you get the actual owners who did everything. that I'm talking about. You know, I mean, I always tease people. I go, you know, like if somebody is, you know, I'm trying to go, hey, would you mind carrying El Bendito Yankee? And I always tell them, go, hey, it's not every day the owners walk into your place.
That's right. That's very true. I mean, I do get the pleasure of having a lot of owners and master distillers that, because I'm talking to a lot of people who are, you know, deeply involved with their brand. And I do get every once in a while that brand that just chose their, you know, they chose 1, 2, 3, or 4 and put it in their bottle, right? And I understand that that's how some people create a tequila brand. I'm always looking for people like you that had a hand in, I know what this is supposed to taste like, and I know what natural tastes like, and I want it to taste like that. And there's also a lot of celebrities that, you know, they pick a profile and they say they want it additive free, and then they ask if you could make it sweeter. And, you know, sure, they make it sweeter, but they don't necessarily maybe make it sweeter.
Well, we've had some bad ones, man. We've had some bad ones, Bradley, in the fact that, I mean, I've got some good friends that played professional basketball that came out with some tequilas, and man, I can't even stomach them. I mean, I can't even fake that I like it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they really know when you spit it back in the glass. That's the really hard part. How was that? Oh, that was good. We have a name for those tequilas here at my house. Those are the ones that we use to clean the urinal. Yeah. And well, I get those sent to me every once in a while.
I got to tell you, that's a funny story you bring up is that, so we're at Nobu. Nobu in Chicago is one of our better accounts in Chicago. And I told everybody, I go, listen, Nobu is a great restaurant. I mean, it's, you know, world-class, world-renowned. And I'm always talking about, you know, let's have the Nobu, let's get into all those Nobus around the country and so forth. But so my friends there at Nobu, I go, man, you guys burned through some cases last week. And one of the guys go, Jim Bob, we love it so much, we'll actually clean the bar with it. I go, well, don't tell the ownership that.
Yeah, no doubt. But, you know, I just heard of people taking their favorite tequila and then dipping their cigars in it before they smoke their cigars. I was like, I mean, I'm not a cigar smoker, and I'm one of them little wimpy guys with asthma. So I've never been much of a smoker, but these guys, I guess they, do you know about that? James is shaking his head. Yes.
We did it with a name. I tell you what, we have this party called Meet and Greet, M-E-A-T.
Nice. Greet.
So basically you have to put together this whole dinner for about 25 guys, and it's got to be, you know, meet and you know, we invite, you know, 25 guys, you get to bring guests, so you end up 50 people. And so, you know, I brought my Añejo, and they break out the cigars, and the guys were dipping it. They do it in brandy, and they do it in bourbon.
No kidding.
And whiskey and scotch a lot, but we did it with the Añejo. We had some Añejo-infused cigars presented for us about a year ago, and they were actually very, very good. I was surprised at how good they were. I thought it was maybe kind of a gimmicky, but I really like that. And the Añejo goes well with cigars and so forth, and that's a good thing. You know, when we came out, you know, with the product, we were really lucky. And I do give Jeff Ernst a lot of credit for some stuff that we did. You know, we got gold medals right away. We got platinum medals right away. We were well received, you know, and Jeff knew where to go and where to step us through, you know, in the market presentation. And so we had, you know, I thought we celebrated some incredible feedback, you know, on our initiation, and the medals that we got were great. And then, you know, we hit the road. And then I will tell you, I mean, you know, when we got to Florida, we opened up in Illinois, and then, you know, we started Wisconsin, but the reason people go Wisconsin's not noted for heavy tequila drinking. And I think, they're willing to learn, brother. They are good. Those people up there are well versed. They're ready to go. But when we went to Florida and our girl, Tammy Maggi, she's just great. And she owned Key West, and we had the boat down there. We won the world championship with the boat a couple of years ago, and the El Bendito boat. And then last year, Steve and the guys on the boat, I don't know if you saw that, but you could pull up the El Bendito boat. They caught a wave, and they flipped and went 30 feet over. It went viral. No, that was, I told Steve, I go, man, you guys are committed.
Great marketing.
But Key West, man, we own Key West down there. They love El Bendito Yankee, and I'm happy about that reception that we got there. But, you know, we've been hitting the road. You know, we've got about 4 or 5 states that we'll finish opening up this year. You know, we plan on, you know, the brand being obviously coast to coast. You know, we're in California, you know, all the way to Florida, New York, Jersey, all the states in between. But, I think that in 27, we're going to launch internationally. We're open up in Mexico. We feel it, you know, we should. We pay a lot of heritage to the Mexican culture. I love the people that we work with down there. I mean, they're just great people. So we want to, you know, basically play that back for them and so forth. But guys and girls are hitting the road. Despite the fact that we understand that we got to make our own brand, our distributors have powered us up to the fact that, you know, we're top 30 tequila in the world. Nelson Rating has us. I mean, we keep moving, you know, up the ladder on that. James could speak more about some of that stuff that we've done in regards to the success on that marketing wheel. We've really got the recognition, you know.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about some of that, James. Tell us some of the things that you've got going on and the things you've done.
Yeah, well, going back a couple of years, we kind of went with this broad, national, wide-scale marketing strategy, sponsoring Jelly Roll, doing the NASCAR, and I think that worked, getting our name out there, you know, putting us on the map, but we're more so focused on the more intimate local markets, working directly with bars, restaurants, distributors, people like you, I think, is really pushing the brand forward. And so it's just, you know, conquering territory by territory, you know, step by step. And that's really, I think, taking us to, you know, it may not be as fast, but it's the most steady route.
Are you focusing more on an on-premise restaurant bar? Or are you focusing more on liquor stores, or are you kind of spreading it across both?
I always like the saying that the brand's built on-premise and sold off-premise. And so we're probably 60, maybe 65% on-premise. And I think that really gets the brand awareness, getting the liquid to lips. And then when people try it and they really like it, then they go to the liquor store and get it. We really haven't landed, you know, major chains like, you know, getting into a Kroger would be great. But I think you have to build the brand on premise and really just grind it out district by district. And then sooner or later, they're going to pay attention. They're going to see the Nielsen ratings. Be like, hey, people are asking for it. We're going to have to bring it in.
Yeah, I agree.
The other thing, too, is we do a lot of business with Costco and Walmart, like big business. You know, we support billion-dollar income stream products for those entities. And so we had the opportunity to be in those places early on. And, you know, we didn't feel that it was the right time, number one. And we didn't want to hurt, you know, some of the people that we were going after, whether it was ABC, whether it was Total Wine, you know, whether it was Benny's, you know, on and on, name everybody, is it. But we felt that if we would have done that, that might have hurt, you know, that was our thought process, right or wrong. We felt that it could have hurt our association with, you know, whether it was a local liquor store or whether it was a chain of retail spirit sales. So
yeah, I can see that. If you're going to be in Walmart, I don't want to put you on my shelf because, you know, someone's picking up there when they get their groceries instead of making that extra trip to the liquor store to come here and get something special.
And that's how we looked at it. We looked at it that way from a business standpoint, and whether we were right or wrong on that, I don't know. I felt that we were being extremely conscientious for, you know, the local folks. And, you know, I guess you're damned if you do, damned if you don't in some aspects. I mean, with the changing elements of distribution today, the distribution world is, in my opinion, since we got into this business, you know, a short time ago, and, you know, gosh, I mean, we'll be operating now, and we go into our fifth full year, which is amazing. Our fifth full year, and you know, we've achieved, you know, great heights of that. But I mean, I love it. I love it. Keep pouring it. You've got more than I have. As I mentioned, guys have been at my house here in Florida for a week, and they've drained. I can tell you what's left here. There's a bottle of 818 sitting there that's completely unopened, but all of the damn El Bendito Yankee's gone.
the 818s for the cleaning crew when they get there. They're going to use exactly that thing, right, to clean the urinals with that.
Yeah, I should actually turn the camera and show you all the other tequilas that they didn't drink. I'm like, well, okay, but they drank my stuff.
That's what I said. That's how you know you got good stuff, is they drank yours and they left the other stuff. And I know who to call when I run out to get more. Oh, so.
Yeah, you're a lifetime member, brother. You're in. You're in the right crowd now. But, you know, the changing horizon of the distribution element, there's a lot of places now that, you know, you've got to, the guys aren't making the rounds to you. You know, you've got to put it on the app and you've got to call it in and so forth. And versus the distributors, you have to have somebody come by and, you know, and get the orders. And so it's a changing environment for us, and we got to adapt as they change and continue to push and continue to make this brand. And I can tell you, we're a pretty good disruptor in the fact that we've had some major celebrity brands getting taken out completely, because once we get into a place localized, they don't even want it anymore, you know, and that's
so good. Speaking of that change, I have a question. What, you know, there's been a lot of changes in alcohol consumption, distribution, all those things have changed. Where do you think tequila is going? Because there's a lot of talk of how the future of our business looks like. What do you see for the future of tequila in general?
Well, I'm always teasing James and his friends about it, and the fact that, hey, you know, we've got a changing environment on generational side. And I go, guys, I couldn't even begin to tell you how much fun I had going out with my pals and hitting the streets and hitting the honky tonks and going out and having a great time. And you know, having spirits was part of that good time. I mean, I feel that, you know, I don't want a generation to lose out like they did during COVID, when, you know, they didn't get to go to school, they didn't get to do a bunch of stuff, and they missed a whole year and a half to 2 years of their life. I go, man, get out there and go meet people and go have fun. And you know, you can be healthy. You know, it's everything in moderation. I mean, but, you know, so many of my good times were me and the guys, we get together, we'd load up and you know, we'd hit the haunts, man. We'd hit the honky tonks, we'd hit the dive bars. And, you know, let me tell you something, Bradley. There's no great stories that ever started with salad.
But no doubt. Tell you what,
there's a shitload of stories out there that start with, man, I was having some El Bandito with my buddy. And damn it, boy, I'll tell you. So that's how good stories start.
I use another one too. I always say, you know, people say, well, you don't have to have tequila to have fun. And I was like, well, you don't have to have shoes to run, but it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, you know, we are the official tequila of couples. You know, we just grab them and take them. We're the official tequila of game day, having fun on game day. You know, like I said, we put more people together, more couples together than Tinder. And so, you know, we're going to come up with some more taglines. I'm going to get your help on that. But, you know, we just take them over and we start owning them.
You just need to come out with a bunch of feasts and say, this is what happens when two great tequilas get together and just have a little case of 50 milliliter bottles. This little baby bottles.
The 50s are out.
Oh, there you go. See, so you're already making babies.
James, make sure you get some 50s sent over to Bradley, okay?
Yeah, that's a good picture idea. I like that.
Yeah, the 50s are out. We're excited about that. And then, you know, I mean, I talk about the success of the brand in regards to, I mean, hey, it's and Bradley, you know, I mean, it's authentic. It's exactly the way tequila is supposed to be made. And we pride ourselves in that, and we pride ourselves in the fact of who we are. We're an ornery little company that is out there disrupting the market and creating a great product, and we want everybody to experience it. Really, that's, I can tell you, is that we have it at every single party that we host. And it's funny, we had some people in that were pretty stiff the other day. Man, I noticed that we flew, they went in the El Bandito jet and to one of our establishments. And so it's pretty stiff. And then we're flying them from this place to the airport next so they can go to their different destinations around the country. And we stop and we have some El Bandito Yankee at the loft. And we spent about an hour and a half there. I could just tell you the decibel level on the airplane went from about 30 to about 110 after we had that El Bandido. So, and I tell you what, we are definitely the tequila of, you know, we'll make you a better dancer.
No, oh, there you go. And that's what I need. 100%. Okay. I got a serious question for you. So now that you've built this, like you've built a lot of things, you've had a lot of success in your life. If you could take your favorite one of El Bandido Yankee, pour a glass, and sit down with somebody, alive, dead, famous, not famous, family, not family, whoever, and sit down and one, share a glass with them, and also share a bit of this story and what you were trying to accomplish from the very, very first day, who would you most want to sit down and share that glass of tequila with?
Yeah, well, my story is going to be different than James. I mean, I'm a huge Elvis fan. I mean, right. I love Elvis, and I love the, you know, his stories interesting and in his entertainment. I mean, you know, I mean, listen, first and foremost, I mean, I love that song, you know, I'd like to have a beer with Jesus. Is it? But I tell you what, as a living human being person, I got to tell you, I regret the fact that I never got to see him in concert, but I would love to sit down and jam with Elvis. James, who's yours?
I think he told me in the last video it was you.
That's a good one. Good
answer. You're welcome. You're welcome, James.
James, we can't hear you.
Muted yourself somehow.
I'm gonna go with Paul Newman.
God, that'd be cool.
You know what? He's on my list.
Yeah.
From the movie.
He's on my list.
He would like it.
I'm gonna tell you this, Jim. I was 8 years old. My mom and dad put me in our car. We drove from my little town where I grew up in Wabash, Indiana, to the Fort Wayne Coliseum. And I got to see the Diana Ross open for Elvis Presley in the Fort Wayne Coliseum. Wow. Then the next show that he played was a couple of weeks later in Bloomington, Indiana. And then a few weeks later, he played at Market Square Arena. And then that was the last show that he ever played. So I, as an 8-year-old, actually got to see Elvis Presley, who I just thought was absolutely amazing. He inspired me in music from, you know, I still play guitar today. I absolutely love music, and it's really just because of me growing up with Elvis. It was awesome.
I'll have to send you some of my Elvis impersonations. He really, my Elvis, so.
I love it already.
So we do Elvis birthday. So I dress up as Elvis, you know, every other Halloween and so forth. And so every time I get dressed up, so I ordered a pretty expensive Elvis costume. I mean, it was like $150. And it's really super soft and stretchy, the material. And I will tell you that, I mean, it was hard for me to, I mean, it was so comfortable. I would wear it around and people go, "Didn't you wear that yesterday?"
Okay, now this... that has to go on a bottle as well.
Yeah.
That Elvis, can go on the extra on Yeho. Just a picture of you on the front in an Elvis costume. I would love it.
Yeah, Elvis would be great to do that. I mean, I could come up with some other ones. I mean, you know, sports-wise, I got to sit down with a lot of good sports figures, though, sure. And have some times. I mean, I'll never forget, I got to sit down with Kenny Stabler and Bum Phillips, you know, and that was a great time. I mean, we were sipping on some whiskey back then. So those were fun times. But I mean, you know, there's nothing better than sitting around, you know, with somebody like we're talking about this, and spending an hour or so just talking, you know, smack. And El Bandido, like I said, is at Arenejo. I find when I profiled that, you know, I was going for a certain smooth profile. I'm a bourbon fan. I'm a big whiskey fan too. And I always tell everybody, I go, "Well, man, have you had an old fashioned with Arenejo? Because it is really, really good. I mean, super good."
Well, man, we've been on here for an hour. I know you guys have a busy week. I want to say to you, thank you so much for taking your time to do this. And I'm over the moon. This is so cool to me to have you on. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bradley.